stories of neurodivergence, yet you can't find the ones that speak to your life. Utopia the Campaign aims to platform the voices of neurodivergence across different communities and life circumstances, so we find the words to get the support we need. Join me, Samantha Hugh, Director of ADHD Girls, as I uncover hidden stories of neurodivergence that come from a few, but speak to so many parts of our lives. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. And I have an amazing guest today, and she is just a like multi-potentialite, omnipotentialite, you know, and she does so many things, and she's got an amazing course that I can't wait to tell everyone about. So Jalika, really happy that you could join me today. Can you tell me a bit about you, what you do, and what neurodivergence do you identify with?
Totally. Great to meet you, Samantha. Love this platform. Love what you're doing. A bit about me. I'm Jalika. I'm a neurodivergent myself, ADHDer, and I am the little sister of a non-speaking autistic individual, which is my journey with my brother Vikram has sort of inspired a lot of the work that I do with, you know, starting all the way in high school. As president of Best Buddies to college, where I worked on research in the School of Interactive Computing for communication tools for individuals who are non-speaking, and then eventually going on to working a full-time job in accessibility, and then now to founding Mentra to empower neurodivergents across the world to find employment where their brains and hearts can really thrive and tap into their fullest potential in the workforce, because underemployment is not a fun feeling. So much opportunity for us to like evolve humanity and solve all of the important issues of today. But if we're underemployed, it's just like, we're not tapping into that. So that's really the mission at Mentra, is to build a technology that can, you know, act as a translation layer and really enable employers to harness this potential.
It's amazing, Jalika. And I look at you and I think, wow, you know, you obviously knew about neurodivergence, you know, from a very, very young age, you know, being a caregiver to your brother who is a nonverbal autistic. So you've lived and breathed this life for a long time. And so you didn't really waste much time after university, you know, to go straight and start your own company with this massive mission. And you appear to me, you know, when I watch your TED Talks and your videos, like you're someone who's just so powerful and you believe in your mission so much and you've got so much energy and passion, you know, and you managed to elevate this, you know, based on your very personal story and your family's story to create this amazing platform that helped neurodivergents fulfill their potential. But can you tell me a bit about what drove you, you know, to create this extraordinary feat?
Yeah, actually, there's a story that I'd love to share from when I was 3 years old. And I told the story after, but my uncle, he wanted to buy me a drink. And he was like, okay, would you like me to buy you this juice? And I was like, only if you buy one for my brother too, you know, because he didn't get to come out on the journey. He didn't get to come to the store and get juice with us. And so it was like so important to me that, you know, all of the opportunities that I've had to go to school and to travel overseas and go to college and find employment, I watched as my brother didn't really have those opportunities. You know, he was spent a lot of time at home and with my parents. And once I left, you know, there was so little of a prospect for us to stay connected and for him to feel like a valued member of society. And, you know, that's what led me to do a lot of the research in college and figuring out, okay, like maybe he is intelligent, you know, just because he needs the help of my parents to do basic things like brushing his teeth, that doesn't mean that he is any less intelligent than myself or anyone else. And that's really what led to looking for technologies to help him communicate his thoughts and express himself. And after working and learning about you know, spelling to communicate and doing research there, it through the iPad was able to, and letter boards, was he was able to type and spell. And that experience of like like learning that my brother, learning my brother's personality and like getting to know him after all these years of him being completely silent and me having to guess, what he's thinking or feeling. It just like transformed my whole life, transformed his entire life. And he started writing poetry. That's actually how he expresses himself. So realizing that he can, keep writing and find an opportunity that would, allow him to do that as a career is a personal goal, a personal mission of mine. And then also on the journey, realizing, I am different too. And I, have for so long have not fit in and fit into the box of society. And as an ADHDer, kind of combining my experience and his experience and the experience of so many folks that we've talked to in our research and out in the workforce, to really build something that makes the world a better place, especially for my brother and the millions of other neurodivergents.
Oh, it's great to hear you say that. I suppose a lot of what you want to do right now is probably contributed by the number of times that you've seen, Vikram, your brother, navigate his daily life in a world that at the time wasn't really built for him, growing up as children. And now that technology has starting, it's starting to catch up. We are able to translate some of these messages, and you don't really need to really speak to communicate. Things can be, translated through AI or through tech. So that's amazing. And how did it feel for you, being there for Vikram? I mean, supposedly you were also flying under the radar, but you didn't know that, and because like so many of us, like me, we didn't know that. There is a reason that we get bored in class or we fall asleep when something is, not catching our attention. Like, so how does it feel for you, when you're going through all that with Vikram, to see him struggling in his life?
In fact, when you mentioned like technology, like I was just thinking about like brain computer interfaces and how it would be so cool. Like, we don't have to rely on motor movement eventually. It could just eventually like he could just think it and we'd be able to know and help him support him. But yeah, I mean the journey of how it felt navigating, it was definitely, there was a lot of challenges along the way of like being in, college. And I mean, just even being like a young child and not being able to focus in school and my parents sitting me down and saying, okay, you have like concentration problems. Let's try to work on this. Like, let's try different techniques. Like there's something in Indian culture where you like breathe in like hot steam from hot water, just to like focus and sort of like almost a meditation. It was very interesting. Like now looking back, all makes sense. And just navigating the journey of like, going through college and having this like deep core mission, but being in a STEM field and learning computer science and like not having that, like I was not good at computer science. By no means do I call myself a coder. But my passion for UX design and accessibility sort of came through. And it was only until I took sort of this StrengthsFinder test that I realized that, wow, like maybe I shouldn't be focusing on my weaknesses and trying to compensate for the things I'm not naturally good at. Maybe I should just go 100% into my strengths. And that was the Gallup Clifton StrengthsFinder test that I took. And that really was so rewarding for me to take and then to focus on, bringing my brother's story to professors on campus and like to speaking events on at school and eventually at TEDx Georgia Tech and using my, strengths and a lot of those were communication and influencer traits, as opposed to like detail-orientedness and all the stuff that I'm definitely not very good at. And yeah, just having that story heard and then folks, guiding me and sharing resources and eventually the professor that's sharing with me that my brother could be intelligent and here's how he can communicate. Like it was extremely rewarding and I feel blessed every day to have like all of those opportunities and like realize that, okay, maybe it's time to focus on my strengths. If I had realized that later in life, like I don't think things would have been the same. So yeah, the feelings were a roller coaster, that's for sure.
Oh, I'm getting goosebumps hearing it, especially the last line that you said, that if you had realized it later in life, you're not sure what that's going to look like. And, personally, I can tell you what that looks like, because I have had a very eclectic career, like I said to you. And it took me a long time to really figure out why I just like to do so many things all at once. But it was not until I founded a social impact company with a purpose that I really believed in and that I could use all the skills that I have somehow diverged to. And actually, it was so interesting because when I left university, I never knew how to even post anything on social media. There probably wasn't social media at the time. That was like Instagram, or the way LinkedIn was used, it's not like this today. And yeah, so the storytelling and the communication only came about when I became a writer, because when you're a scientist, you're very much like factual. And then a lot of people were complaining that scientists actually don't know how to translate all the complex concepts to lay people. And so all these things took time. But yeah, there's pros and cons, and I'm glad for you that your journey started straight away, into creating your own place, in the world of work. And it's amazing to see, the passion and also the impact that you're making, and when you can see it so close to home as well, it's incredible. And now I really want to cast a spotlight on you as an entrepreneur, a neurodivergent like me, who's a woman of color. Were there any barriers that you encountered, in your journey so far?
That's a great question. Yeah, as an entrepreneur, I mean, a lot of those challenges in college I was saying earlier, I definitely had a lot of consistent and persistent like desire and urge to just drop out. I mean, it was so hard for me to even stay like an extra day to a certain point where like it just felt like, and it was almost like being torn between, doing things that society wanted you to do and, get good grades and go to classes, and then you actually having like a deep, cause and a purpose and a reason. And people, a lot of times, some people you come across just don't, understand that. And sometimes, are not, as kind as you would hope for them to be. And so there's always like that sort of backlash, or even people who, don't didn't might not have believed in you until you actually accomplished it. And so kind of coming up against that, especially when it came to feelings of, dropping out. And even when I had a day job before becoming an entrepreneur, I was working at a financial bank as a technologist focused on accessibility. But it was very interesting to see how a lot of a lot of teammates oftentimes didn't understand the challenges that individuals with disabilities faced. And so a lot of it was, as you said earlier, very like legal. It's, compliant. Just make sure that you're passing, checking off the boxes. And not really considering like the human perspective of like, okay, who's the person you're building this for? Like, are they really benefiting from these changes that you're making? And so that was, it was hard because for 2 years I was working on Mentra as sort of a side hustle. So, and I think that's very common in the community, right? To sort of have something that you're doing on the side that really gets you excited. And it was interesting because I would wake up and go to a 9 to 5 and then be like, I would wake up in the morning excited to work on Mentra, but then would have to kind of pursue the day job activities. And it almost felt like I was living a double life. And the part of my brain that was like, at first I kind of joined and I got involved in everything. Like I was like, I'm going to join every employee resource group, like Women in Tech, like Disability Action Network, like Neurodiversity. I'm going to do all of it. And then I just like completely burnt myself out because I was doing that plus doing this startup. And at one point we grew to 40 teammates, who were all kind of like on call in college, volunteering, like helping out with this mission. When we, how we, that's how we started in school. So it was definitely, a challenge to kind of figure out, okay, my brain is naturally like just going to try everything, but it's so important to be like healthy and sustain that in the long term. So really just like focusing in on what I'm really, really good at and not having like a double life and just kind of figuring out one thing and going all in on that. That was the first time in my entire life I had just done that, And that was like a very, it was an incredible like transition, I think, to just focus in on it. And I think now I'm like, how did I have the time to do all of that? Like, I just don't understand. But yeah, the world is like, it's so exciting that the world is so receptive, and that, we can have these conversations about being ADHDers and like it's not seen as a weakness, because initially that was how folks, and especially from cultures where I come from, my family is Indian, I'm especially South, particularly South Indian, and so there's definitely a lot of like stigmas that are being overcome in the neurodiversity field in India. And I don't think it's until you kind of demonstrate success in a traditional way do folks start to not think of you as having a weakness, but more so seeing it as a strength. Not to say that there aren't weaknesses, but there's definitely like it's the whole spectrum of experiences.
Yeah, you're completely right, you know, especially within the Asian community where, yeah, you do kind of have to prove yourself. And how you prove yourself, as you rightly point out, it's to have a good job, you know, to get some sort of status in society. And I'm not sure if you come across this, but at the age of 40 over, I realized that actually there's a different hierarchy of needs diagram for Asians. You know, and it is based completely differently from what people know as the Maslow hierarchy of needs, you know, which the respect and status is at the very top in the Asian hierarchy of needs. So with respect, it has to come with, you know, your standing in society and also, I suppose, money, you know, that goes with that. You know, and I suppose it goes back, you know, centuries, you know, of oppression and discrimination, I suppose. You know, it's how people had to fight for their livelihood, you know, in order to have a standing in society. Can I ask, how did you break down those barriers, you know, that you faced to scale Mantra? Because you were talking about how at one point your team grew to 40 and then you were still holding on this full-time job, you know, and then you had Mantra that's growing on the side, you know, and obviously you had to make this leap at some point. And did it involve like maybe convincing the people around you that you can do this full time, you know, and what was your process in getting
Yeah.
there?
Yeah. I will say you mentioned that Maslow's hierarchy. Like we should post that like in the screen. I mean, that's so true. Like respect is definitely seen as like on top. And I recently was able to receive an honorary doctorate for the work that I was doing. And I mean, in Indian culture, like, you know, having a PhD or it's even sa in Asian culture like that. And like, or even an honorary doctorate was like, oh, wow. And I think like that was so interesting to kind of see like the shift in people for so long were seeing me pursue this startup and didn't see the value or like maybe the financial value in it. And then all of a sudden it's like the respect, you know, what's traditionally seen as respect, even especially my parents. So that was really interesting because I think earning your respect, especially from your parents, as a neurodivergent and as ADHDer, is, I mean, it's challenging. Like for so long they were kind of always trying to discipline you, but that doesn't work. So showing that maybe thinking outside the box can bring immense like other forms of rewards that leap kind of grow along the way. But yeah, to your question about how did we smash down the barriers with Mentra, it was interesting because it started, as you said, it's like, you know, we were on campus, it was a side project, it was something that was just, you know, we were partnering with clubs on campus and kind of bringing in technologists from there or like data scientists or, you know, different folks with different skill sets. And then many folks who had, you know, never heard of neurodiversity before who were learning about it through being involved with Mentra. And then many who were either neurodivergent themselves, like our CTO and our COO who are on the spectrum, and many who have been touched by neurodiversity with, you know, family members or growing up, you know, volunteering and even parents working as teachers. So it's sort of, you know, all of us who ended up staying on the team, now we are that it is a full-time company and we're a startup and we kind of shifted over from the project. We are six people working on this full-time, so small and nimble, and all of us on the team sort of went through the ups and downs of, you know, doing this, you know, as an organization that is trying to make like a social impact on the world and also like demonstrate the business value in the world of hiring neurodivergents. Because initially, it's so easy to just get classified as like a quote unquote charity or something that's, you know, when it's a social good startup. But I love what the founder of Whole Foods says about like conscious capitalism. Like we can, you know, serve the world and also reap the rewards of it, because that is like the diversity of the human population is like what we're representing. So they're going to buy our products if we're like socially and ethically driven. So yeah, I think that was definitely interesting to kind of focus in, bring in a core team. We have, you know, folks focused on data science, as well as product and design, as well as operations. And it's interesting every day because it, like, as the CEO and kind of overseeing all of it, like, I can get my different threads of my brain into, like, different, you know, like, teams really easily and kind of juggle all of it, which has been, like, definitely much easier than previously, where it was not only the teams, but it was also, like, all the other stuff outside the organization. But it's a journey. I mean, executive functioning for me personally is also not, you know, calendars and scheduling and preparing for things in advance is, like, something I'm learning and growing into. So it's an ever evolving process.
I want to be you. You're so, like, good at, you know, just kind of conceptualizing things, you know, communicating is definitely, you know, a strength of yours, and you know, visionary, like, yeah, kind of, if I was born again, maybe. Truly. Yeah, so there are a lot of women with ADHD out there. You know, I suppose upon understanding that they, you know, have brain differences later in life, who want to create their own place in the world of work, what would you advise them? You know, what would be your words, you know, for them to find their place that they'll be content with?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I wish I, okay, let's see. Opens up like 5 million tabs in your brain trying to figure out, like, what's the thing that will be, like, the most effective to leave you with today. I would say, like, I mean, we talked a lot about purpose today and, like, having a core kind of mission that drives you. And it's so easy to get distracted in today's world. And especially with your own thoughts, like, you know, as society, you know, has sort of certain expectations and sometimes puts us in situations, I think it's really helpful to, like, be grounded in that purpose and kind of think about, like, what could you be doing every day to reach the highest, fullest version of yourself? And, you know, sometimes building mechanisms to do that, like, I have the 5-minute journal that I have that, you know, and you wake up in the morning and you write down, like, 3 things that you really think would make a big difference and serve your highest potential. Because then when the day hits, it's like, where did that go? You know, it was in my brain, but now all this other stuff has come up. And sometimes, like, just having that process, like, helps with, you know, reaching those goals and, like, no matter what the distractions might be, like, kind of staying true to that, I think, yeah, would be something I would leave you with. And I also, yeah, I would say that, yeah.
Oh, thank you. That's really meaningful. You know, yeah, I mean, completely right. Because, you know, when you find your place in your career, you know, a place that you think is right for you, you know, it also comes with challenges. And that's why you need to really align yourself with that purpose, you know, because when the challenges occur, you don't just retreat completely and just give up, you know, like you've said a few times, and I identify with as well, when, you know, things are hard and it's not something you're interested in, you can easily just want to, like, drop it, right, and move on to the next thing that, you know, the new thing, right, which is great for novelty and, you know, the ADHD brain. Thanks, Jalika. Because we have a little bit of time, do you mind if I ask you a bonus question?
Yes, and I actually, oh yeah, do you, okay, I was going to say, I pulled up a quote that, like, I wanted to, in one of the tabs, I found it. So I'd love to read that. And then,
of course, yes, please.
Hopefully you'll remember the question too. Okay, so shift your focus away from what you want. And this is by Justine Musk, who's Elon Musk's previous wife. Shift your focus away from what you want and get deeply, intensely curious about what the world wants and needs. Ask yourself, what do you have the potential to offer that is so unique and helpful that no computer could replace you, no one could outsource you, no one could steal your product and make it better, and then club you into oblivion? Get deep into that potential. Choose the one thing and become a master of it, because this will help you move between worlds, speak the both languages, connect the tribes, mash the elements, and spark fresh creative insight that will help evolve society and humanity. And I totally, like, paraphrase that. So, but
Love that. I use that too. You know, I actually included some of those in Inheritance Talk in one of the courses that I made. So yeah, that there is, she talks about like how, you know, like people who live at the edge, like that edge could be transformational if that edge could connect two worlds, right? And the thing you talked about, you know, about how like, you know, you could connect two different like industries or the disciplines together. And so that is such an amazing quote. I love that. Love, love, love that. Thanks for sharing.
For sure.
Yeah.
Especially when it stems from like personal experience. Like you shared, your journey, learning about your ADHD and then like focusing on building something that like solves a challenge that you faced or a loved one faced. Like I think that's the beauty of like empathy and compassion. And I think it's really cool to like tap into that and like turn that like human emotion into like a living, like breathing, like something that will actually like touch people's lives. I think that whole process is just really cool. And I'm so glad you're doing it as well.
Thank you, thank you. You're lovely. And, yeah. So back to my final question, right? And that's to bring the spotlight back on ADHD. You know, I want to find out what it means to you, but more so around the nuances, you know, of how ADHD looks like to you. You know, how it manifests for you compared to what you've ever read about. You know, because it took you time to realize that you had ADHD. You flew under the radar for decades. And so, what was it, you know, like, what would a healthcare professional need to know earlier on if they were to pick it up in you, you know, that they didn't? So I hope that question is making sense to you.
It totally does. Yeah. I mean, I think even at a young age when, you're so prone to like kind of daydreaming or, thinking of other things or getting really caught up on like a very specific concept and other people kind of thinking that you don't care to listen to them, but it's not really that you don't care. It's just that like you're brain can't like process that information because it's like so deep down this one thread, and so like having, a support system of people who understood that and harnessed that. There are some teachers who oftentimes like reprimanded, that kind of behavior. I think the feeling of being disrespected was is, I guess, common with like managers, teachers, people we work with, and just expressing, and just them knowing that and understanding that would have been like, really, really helpful to kind of include and be more inclusive of the different thinking. Oh, and then I'm just thinking about, I mean, there's so many, like, when it comes to like concentrating, organization of different, tasks and also like brain activities. I think now that I'm older and I have a lot of tools to like help build processes and steps and like structure in my life, it's been very helpful. But up until like so recently, like I think it's been like a challenge to kind of communicate that because I think when you understand, like after understanding my ADHD, and I'm able to communicate it better to others and explain like, oh, I'm sorry I did this. It's because, I get easily distracted or, I have an issue completing tasks and I promise like I will get to it. It's on my like 500 items of to-dos, but I'll put it in number three, and being like even impulsive sometimes, like things like that, being able to communicate it has been so helpful because that understanding of ADHD is becoming more universal. The way that people think differently is becoming more universal. And now I can say that, it's helped me get to where I am today, but for so long when you can't say that and when it's like a burden and a weakness and you're like constantly shunned for it, it's more and more challenging. So I think no more shunning, like teachers and, individuals in society just need to understand that this is the kind of thinking that, will evolve humanity, and it's important to respect that and like
I
harness
see.
that.
Yeah, I mean, just hearing you say, you know, like how your ADHD had got you into trouble in the past, you know. And it's like it's quite different for me who grew up in an Asian culture where there was this cultural control to be like polite and respectful of your elders, and that includes your teachers. So, I mean, of course, there are people who couldn't really quite, you know, control that and then end up getting in trouble anyway.
I was only in the US actually for college. So college was the time when a lot of it, like I was able to learn more and speak up more about it. But I actually grew up in the Middle East in Dubai, which is where my family lives today.
Yes.
And they're from India, so we would go back frequently. But it was a similar, actually very similar experience as well of like the masking, you know, and kind of feeling like shutting, like keeping everything under this facade and then going home and just like exploding or kind of like melting down about it or like going into the bathroom and crying, you know, like it's definitely has had like that effect too. And then that's where like the lack of shunning and things helps, like the kindness helps, you know. And also like now being able to express like how important that decompression time is and you know all of the above has been so useful to kind of manage like the different, constantly different, ever evolving environments that are all we're always being exposed to online and in person as well.
Yeah, so you did have a cross-cultural experience as well, which must be so different, like a whole new world on its own, right? Because I suppose in Dubai, it's even more kind of stigmatized, isn't it? You don't really talk about it. And
Yeah, there's a whole like disparity and so many cultures that like come into play because it's kind of the place where all the there's so many expatriates, everyone is from a different country and speaks a different language. Definitely I would, you know, call myself like the floater, like never really have a, you know, kind of feel. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like with all the friends, like you can kind of like relate to some, but like you're just on your own floating around. But yeah.
yeah, in the UK, the floater means something very different. But you know, I get what you're saying, but it's a term that I tend to use in some of my talks, and that is the outlier. You're like this, you know. I mean, the outlier comes from a statistical term of a data point that deviates from the standard, you know, norm and the mean. And so you're always kind of finding yourself just on the edge of things and then watching, you know, how people are doing things and also constantly feeling like you're either going against the tide or left behind, you know. And yeah, so eventually, like, you realize that there are also other outliers amongst you, but it's like you're saying, everyone's just kind of trying to pretend like they're the same as everyone else. You know, and that's why we're not really getting the help, you know, that we need. Yeah.
After
Thanks.
that, that's
Yeah.
exactly it. Yeah, like just feeling like you totally stand out, aren't relating to people, and you're so right. Like, there's people who maybe are, you know, outliers too, but conform, and you're like, hey, why are they conforming? Like, should I be conforming too? You know, and I think, I mean, I related to the different definition for sure.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Shalika. It's been an amazing conversation, and really thank you for, you know, taking the time to tell your story and to this platform. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for everything you're doing and for continuing to raise awareness in this community and acceptance and belonging. It's so important, and I'm excited to meet all the other women and girls with ADHD around the world.
Oh, thank you.
What did you think of this episode? If it resonates with you, do share it so we can empower other neurodivergents too. We want to open up conversations for neurodivergents across all communities, especially the ones who are underrepresented, so they can get diagnosed and find the support they need in life and work. I'm Samantha Hugh, Director of ADHD Girls, and you can invite me to speak at your organization or subscribe to my upcoming bite-sized video courses on ADHD and neurodiversity via a new learning platform called Utopia. You can find the link via my link tree within my bio on Instagram and LinkedIn. Special thanks to QuiTech for being such a wonderful collaborator throughout phase one of this campaign.